Folks, the best value at Manager Tools is to buy an annual license to our material. For $200 a year, you get access to show notes for every single show produced, over 100 a year, plus our entire archive of nearly 1,000 shows. You wouldn't want to print it out all in one place. It'd be a management Wikipedia, and it'd be probably 5,000 pages. You get all that, plus access to Things I Think, and even more powerfully, the interview creation tool, which may be our strongest and most least known digital tool that we have, and more digital tools to come in the future, available only to licensees. Ask another licensee. They'll tell you it is the best value they have. Welcome to Career Tools. Our guidance on relationship errors, chapter one. They're not like you. Here we go. Okay, Wendy, we talk relationships all the time. You and I aren't necessarily good at them, but we know they're the second most important thing in careers after results, and they vex an awful lot of people. Half the people in the world aren't naturally good at relationships. And, you know, when we first meet somebody, we spend our time trying to categorize them, and we put them in a category, and we have shortcuts for them. And the first one is whether they're like us or not.
Yeah. Well, if you imagine us as cavemen a long time ago, that's the same part of our brain that's still working. And it says, is this person human or not human? Like, is this person like me or not like me? If it's not like me, it might eat me. So first category, like me. If it is a person, then the next category is this person of my tribe? Which is, you know, are they friend or foe? And it doesn't matter that it's how many of millions of years since we were cave people. Our brains still act the same way, and they still try and provide us with shortcuts.
And our brain does different things as well now, but that stuff still exists. So it starts with that, right?
Exactly.
So I assume what you're wanting us to get out of this initially is that if I meet somebody new and they're like me, it makes it easier for me to befriend them, get along with them, you know, collaborate with them. But if they're not like me, if they're loud and I'm quiet, if they're outgoing and I'm not, if they smile and I don't, then it'll be harder. Then my brain will be telling me, "Ooh, they're not like you."
Exactly. It kind of goes down a chain of making those categories smaller and smaller. It starts with the big ones and it goes down to the small ones. But at every point where it can say, like me, not like me, it will decide friend or foe, and then it will give you those feelings of whether or not you can trust this person, whether or not you want to work with this person, whether or not you feel comfortable being close to this person. And all of those things are useful heuristics sometimes, but they're not useful if you're on a team with somebody and you need to work with them. So you need to overcome that part of your brain and instead of allowing it to use the heuristics, kind of step back and think about, you know, this is a human being. We're more similar than we think, and they're not going to think exactly like me. And so I need to actually listen. I need to actually watch what they're doing. And instead of using the heuristic, instead of leaping to a conclusion without even thinking about it,
right,
I need to see what they're actually telling me.
Okay, what's our outline?
So first of all, we're going to listen to their behavior. We're not going to assume intent or motivation, and we're going to do an upgrade from the golden rule.
I can't wait till we talk about not assuming intent and motivation. That may be one of my favorite aha moments in my career. Okay, you said listen to their behavior. I assume you mean more broadly, just pay attention to their behavior, right? In other words, focus on their behavior rather than on things they can't change to help you understand how they'll tend to behave in the future.
Exactly. So we know that behavior comes in five forms: the words you say, the way you say them, facial expressions, body language, and work product.
And as I like to say to conferences virtually every week, work product is the quality of their work, the quantity of their work, the accuracy of the work, the timeliness of the work. Sometimes we include safety in there, although I put safety in quality generally. And then lastly, the documentation associated with their work. So all email, if you'll pardon the example, is work product.
Yeah. And none of those things are about where you grew up, the size of the house you have, the color of your skin, the religion you follow, all those things that sometimes we use as a quick, oh, all those people are like this.
Right.
Those things, we have to put those out the window and concentrate on people are actually doing. And it doesn't matter what we're doing. All of us are always communicating through those five behaviors. We right. can't help it.
And think about yourself, folks. When you engage in those behaviors, you probably don't spend much time thinking about them and what they're communicating about you. You're simply doing them. It's not unconscious, but it is automatic, which means it's likely to follow a pattern over time. And if you'll pay attention to other people's patterns, it'll make it much easier for you to predict and to understand where they're like you and where they're not.
Exactly.
Good.
So instinct is to go through a checklist and put people either in the category of like me or not like me. So you meet someone for the first time in a conference room and you think, okay, oh, well, you don't think. Your brain does this in the back of your head in 2 seconds or less and then says, here's the result. So it's like Google, here's the result. So it might go human, check. Male, check. Wearing a suit. Check. Works here. Check. Same level as me. Check. Married. Yes. No tattoos or earrings. Check. Must be just like me. And your brain says, good bloke. Just like that. And then we assume a bunch of things about this person, that they have the same values as us, that they make the same things feel are important, that they want the same things as us, and that they don't like the same things as us.
Exactly.
All the communication we do going forward is based on those assumptions that we did based on whether they were male or female, whether they were wearing a suit or not, and so on.
Right.
I mean, maybe the guy just came in today wearing a suit because he's got an interview.
Yeah.
And now you're going to make an assumption about his professionalism or the way he works based on the suit that he wore one day and you don't see every other day what else he wears. It's silly.
Yeah, so we start a conversation, we do something as if they were just like us, and I might send an email to a peer of mine saying, dude, in the meeting next week, can you brief on Project X? Well, there are a lot of people who don't like being addressed as dude. I cannot imagine why. And ladies, for the record, dude is gender neutral. And they might say, gosh, I'd like to know more than the meeting next week. But in my case, I tend to communicate that way. And maybe briefing is not what this person wants, right? Maybe somebody who's more particular than me about details, sometimes to their benefit, sometimes to my benefit, a smart person would want to know, tell me more, give me a sense of the briefing, and, you know, why are we doing it? What are the politics of it? How long do I have? Who's going to be in the room? What do we want them to get out of the briefing? What format? Is it 10 people or 50 people?
Yeah. And you communicated everything you thought they needed to know.
Because I communicated like they were like me.
Exactly. And, you know, to them, it's completely lacking. One other thing we do is we look at people in meetings and we look at their facial expression and we just assume they're like us. So they must be bored or confused or angry, whatever facial expression means to us. And it might not mean that. It might mean I'm thinking.
Yeah, this is huge. This is one of the two biggest aha moments in working with other people that I've ever had. If you see someone do something, engage in a behavior, which includes facial expressions, or work product, or what they said, or how they said it, what most of us do, the big mistake in terms of other people being not like us, is if they do X, we assume, therefore, you don't even realize you're assuming it. Mm-hmm. If they do X, it means they were thinking what we would have been thinking if we did X. And this is astoundingly wrong for 70%, 50, 70, 75% of the people in the world. People don't do things because of the same motivations as you. Some people do things because it's natural. You may say, boy, I have to get really angry internally before I speak disrespectfully to somebody. That would be a high S, someone who's loving and caring and so on. High D doesn't think anything of it. They pop off real quickly. It doesn't take them a day or an hour of being berated in order to get really angry. They use anger as a defense mechanism, whereas, you know, someone else, someone opposite of them, uses avoidance as a defense mechanism. So when you're trying to understand people, and we'll talk more about this in a minute, you guessing at what they're thinking is just wrong. That's my lesson. Wrong. And not, oh, you know, let me think more about them. No, no. Just assume wrong. And I'll hold my second revelation for a little bit because it's so much fun. I remember teaching it in DISC 25 years ago and thinking, I learned something here.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things you say to me sometimes is, why would you do it like that? As if you can't even imagine the thought process that I would have gone through. And I say, it made sense to me because we think completely differently and the way I did it made sense to me. And in many ways, we're alike. And in that way, in some ways, we're different. So we've got a bunch of examples just in case people are struggling to think about this. So we assume that people won't mind staying late because everybody is ambitious like us. Or you think that people would be delighted to go to happy hour because doesn't every single 25-year-old want to have fun in a bar? We think that everyone wants children. And if they don't, they can work the holidays because when I didn't have children, I didn't care about the holidays. Everybody thinks top down or bottom up, depending on the which way you think. You assume everyone wants more money, yep. Which is not true.
Not true.
Everyone wants to work less.
Not true.
Also not true. Everyone has a passion. Not true. Family is more important than work. For some people, that is not true. Even it's probably a lower percentage, you know?
Yeah, it's much, much lower, according to the science that I've seen. But
yeah, but on the other hand, there are some people for whom that is true. Everyone wants to live somewhere warm and sunny. Well, apart from all the people that live north of the Arctic Circle, clearly. Every sentence that starts...
I don't live where it's warm and sunny, so... And I want to live here. I really want to live here, so, yeah.
Any sentence that starts with everyone or includes always...
Or never
can be shown to be false by opposite examples. Yeah. And if you ever argue with your spouse, never include the word everyone, always, or never, because that is a guarantee to escalate an argument. So instead of like inferring people's thoughts or positions or actions, we have to actually listen to them. We have to actually watch them. We have to not assume, but interpret. And to interpret, you have to have information. You have to have context. You have to have the words. You have to have some understanding of someone's history. And you can't just say, okay, so they're a bloke, so they must, you know, like golf and football.
Right.
And everybody is a special snowflake. Nobody is quite like you.
Well, I've made a point recently to somebody that the scope of human existence is such that we're closing in on a point where there will come a time when two people will be born with essential twinness to two different mothers and fathers. Just because of randomness. And then they will have completely different upbringings and it won't matter because they'll diverge in that way. Even though there are a lot of cases where twins end up under different parents and have surprising similarities. But the complexity of the human situation is such that everybody is different and we're trying to simplify it and we probably oversimplify it. And in doing so, we mistakenly look for motivations or intent or background when, in fact, the thing to look for is behavior. And here's the aha I had. What most of us do when we see someone behaving, particularly somebody we don't know, we then watch their behavior and we then start using personality words to describe them. Oh, they're outgoing, they're shy, they're analytical, they're friendly, whatever. These are not behaviors. Of course, these are personality words. Here's actually why that's so, folks. When you were two or three or four, human beings were interacting with you, and your brain is really good at counting behaviors, really good. We teach this at our effective communications training in detail, how to do it effectively. And it works every time. Your brain is very good at counting things and at seeing behaviors, seeing and hearing behaviors. And the reason for that is behaviors of people who are close to you can be beneficial to you or can hurt you. So your brain made a deal with you when you were a baby and said, you are going to be besieged with behaviors. They're going to be too many. You can't even count. You don't know how to count, although your brain knew how to count when you were two. I'm going to count them for you. I'm going to see the hand gestures and the eye movements and the tone and the quality and so on. And I'm going to count them all up and I'm going to make a determination about the person. And because you can't deal with the analytics because you're a baby, I'm going to feed you words when you're 5, 6, 7, 8, and you'll gradually learn more words and you'll gradually get better and better at this. But the words I'm going to feed you are going to be personality words. Oh, this person is friendly. This person is loving. This person is kind. This person is loud. This person is rough. This person is mean, whatever the case. All of those words I just used, outgoing, rough, mean, kind, friendly, whatever, are essentially non-measurable unless we agree on the underlying behaviors that mean somebody's friendly or mean for that reason. So your brain knows this person is slightly this or slightly that or more this or more that, but you couldn't deal with the complexity of the math that your brain was doing, the subtlety of your brain being able to see all these behaviors, and so it fed you these personality words. The end result is those personality words aren't measurements and they're judgmental words. Specifically, if I, when I'm 10, tend to be fairly outgoing and I meet someone who's not, because they're not like me, the personality words my brain uses to describe people who are different than me are personality words that include judgment, which is negative. For instance, if I'm outgoing and I meet a person who's not outgoing, my brain feeds me the personality word when I'm 8, 10, 12, 15 of weak. If I talk loud and somebody else talks soft, then my brain feeds me the personality word of unconfident. If I'm a quiet person and I meet a person who speaks forcefully, they're not confident. They're rude. And this is our brain teaching us personality relative to our own personality and putting it on top of whether they're like us or not. And what we teach at the Effective Communications Conference is to say, don't judge, don't draw emotional personality word conclusions. Don't use words like friendly or outgoing. Say to yourself, okay, what behavior am I seeing? And the reason this is so important is what we learn to do when we're young is we see the behaviors, we infer personality words, some positive, some negative, depending upon whether this person is like us or not. In some cases, many people even get arrogant and say, oh, and I kind of know how they were raised, and I know, you know, what their background is, and so on. And then, in order to work with that person, we project forward 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks. We use this mix of personality and background and nurturing stuff. And by the way, hopefully I've already proved we're not any good at inferring personality or background from behavior. We're terrible at it. Then we project forward those personality traits and so on. And then based on that, we try to extrapolate from that personality the behavior that's going to exist in 2 weeks. This is dumb because we're bad at interpreting what the personality is. And we're also bad at extrapolating what the behavior is that's going to come from that personality in a couple of weeks. However, the thing you can count on with people that is true in far more often than people realize when you start focusing on behavior is you don't need to guess at personality. You don't need to guess at extrapolating what personality means in terms of behavior. The behavior you're seeing this week is very likely to be the behavior you're going to see in 2 weeks.
Yeah, if somebody's late with something, a project or a report or something, you can almost guarantee that 90% of the time they will be late with it. What you can't tell is whether it's because they don't understand the work, because they find it difficult, because they just don't care just because they have a different concept of time than you do. You know, there's a whole range of reasons why they might be consistently late. But the only thing you can tell is that they'll be consistently late.
Yeah. Well, we wouldn't want to say somebody's consistently late because they're late one time. But if there's a pattern, you don't need to guess why. And folks, your brain is really good at jumping to conclusions about why. But intention and motivation are hard to be accurate about for ourselves, believe it or not, let alone for other people. If it were easy for us to know about ourselves, then all those therapist moments where people say, why do you think you're doing that? And the person suddenly has an aha moment wouldn't exist.
The one I like about this is all the people who say, I die to be thin. Well, you clearly wouldn't because you're not.
There's no behavior
so,
in your
so there is, yeah, there is some kind of reward in continuing the behavior that you say you don't want to have.
Exactly.
And so if you don't understand yourself, why do you think that you can understand other people?
Yeah. And you know what? There's an entire industry out there in the world today that is making this problem of guessing at intent and motivation worse. And they're saying we need to coach people. And every time somebody makes a mistake, we should coach them and we should sit down and we should understand why they did it. Folks, we have a podcast for that. It's called There Is No Why in Feedback. Okay. If I make a mistake and Wendy's my boss, if Wendy's smart, she won't get into the why. She'll get into changing my behavior next time because the why and my mistake are both in the past. And it's not your job to change people's thinking. And you're unlikely to be any darn good at it. What you get paid for at work is outcomes. If I did an outcome that isn't helpful to Wendy, she should point out that my outcome isn't good and ask me to change the outcome and allow me. This is absolutely the opposite of micromanagement. It's funny. People say to me, oh, Mark, some of the things you say are micromanagement. And then they suggest that every time their directs make a mistake, they should sit down with the direct and go over their motivation and intent. If that's not micromanaging, getting inside the head of your direct, I don't know what is. Okay. So when you ask a direct, what were you thinking? It's dumb. Okay. Nobody goes into a task or a mistake, a situation, and intends to mess it up. And you're unlikely to get a straight answer to what you were thinking. In fact, what somebody was thinking. In fact, they're going to tell you all the reasons why they did it, and they're all good. Okay? It made sense to them. Yeah. So it's stupid. You're not going to, it's not going to help. And by the way, you're not any good at it.
I guessed all those reasons that you might be late with reports.
Yeah.
And I might say to you, hey, Mark, can I give you some feedback? When you're late with your reports, it puts everybody else's work, makes everyone else's work late. Can you change that? And your answer might be, oh my gosh, I never realized there was work downstream of me. Of course I'll be on time. And that wasn't on any of the things that I could imagine as reasons was as to why you were late, because you're not like me.
Yeah. And look, people are different enough if you're not paying attention to them that you're going to do the mistake that I made many, many times in my life before I learned better, which is, oh, they did that because they're like me, or they did that for the same reasons that I would do it. And that's just dumb. Just because someone has done something that's irritating doesn't mean they did it in order to irritate you. They don't think it would irritate you. I mean, it's rare. There are people who do that, but those people, we have casts on how to get rid of them. They probably didn't even think, if they did it and they discovered later that it might irritate you, they might say, well, okay, but it makes sense. And your irritation, unless you're their boss or their boss's boss, is not a reason not to do it if they believe they have a reason to do it. And maybe they thought the benefit that came out of it would outweigh that cost. If you blow up at them, if you want them to change it just because it irritated you, you're creating a situation where you're telling them what they do is wrong simply because of one outcome, which, by the way, generally getting irritated is not terribly helpful. Take it from somebody who got irritated a lot and still does probably too much.
Take it from two people.
Yeah. Yeah. If you blow up at people because the only way you can see them doing it would have been based on you feeling wanting to annoy someone. There are plenty of other things that damage relationships. We don't need to do it to ourselves. Don't assume the intent that someone else has because it makes sense to you that the only reason to have done that thing or one of the reasons to have done that thing was to irritate you or to have an outcome that you don't like because you're wrong. And even if you get into a conversation with somebody about what they did and why they did it, if you're thinking, okay, that oh, it was this or that. Not only is it wrong, they don't like it. Okay, people just don't like it. They want to stay inside their own heads, and they'll lie about it. Well, I didn't think it would irritate you, or I didn't realize. And you can't win that argument because you don't know what's in their head. They do. And they know you don't know what's in their head, as opposed to talking about behavior, which everyone can see and hear. Okay, last point. Upgrade from the golden rule.
Right. So if anybody hasn't heard the golden rule, it is do unto others as you would that they should do unto you. So in other words, do the things to other people or do the things for other people that you would like them to do for you. So if I go into Starbucks, I would like them to not talk to me, be really fast, and produce my coffee quickly. And if I worked there, that's how I would work, because I would assume that everybody in the line wanted what I would want.
Yeah, that wouldn't go very well, would it?
It wouldn't go very well, because there's some people who go into Starbucks for the conversation, to see the same person, to have a chat.
That reminds me, you mentioned a retail situation, Starbucks. I've told people before, the greatest retail experience I ever had in my life was a number of years ago. I walked into the Apple store. I wanted a new iPhone. This was during the time when the launch had already come out and there was a line and that had already gone. But 3 or 4 weeks later, the Apple website said it was green, meaning that there was available stock in the store in San Antonio. And so I walked into the store and said, I'd like an iPhone, the biggest one you have. And he said, okay. He walked behind the counter, handed me a box about as big as two fists, said, here you go. He asked me, is this your email address? Because I'd shopped there before. I said, yes. And I was out of the store in less than a minute. To you, that's a great experience, right? That's a great retail experience, right?
Every time I go into the Apple store and I need something, I always know what I need. And I walk up to the first person, I said, I need to shop, I've got 5 minutes. And then the person comes over and I say, I've got 5 minutes, this is what I need.
Yeah.
And they do it in 5 minutes because I've told them that.
Yeah, if I'm in a persnickety mood, when a person comes up to me and says something like, hey, how are we doing today, folks? My mental thought is, how is that relevant? It's absolutely not relevant.
Get my stuff.
Yeah, it's just not relevant. I mean, and even if it was relevant, you're asking me to share with you as if we're going to have a chat. And I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in getting the thing I want to get. Maybe that's why I do so much in Amazon. I don't know.
Yeah, me too. So the golden rule, the one that you and I would most like, as you know, everyone would do for us what we would like to have done, has been around for ages. It's one of those things. It's in every religion. There's people who study such things say it's been around since. It's been called the golden rule since the 1600s. And there is also a silver rule, which I didn't know, which is don't do unto others what you wouldn't do unto yourself.
Sure.
In other words, don't go around stealing things and so on.
The whole point of you bringing up golden rule, I assume, is that the golden rule is Mark should do unto Wendy as Mark wants done unto himself, when in fact Wendy is different than me, and that won't work. Wendy definitely doesn't think or feel the same way I do about a lot of things. Right? I mean,
exactly. And that's why someone, I don't know when, created the platinum rule, which is you should do unto others as they would do unto themselves. In other words, you do for them what they would do for themselves.
Yeah.
Not what you would do for yourself.
Don't do for them what you want. Do for them what they want. And this means, and this means, and this means you have to pay attention to what they'd want. And the single biggest signaling effect that people have in what they want is what they do, how they treat other people. Not assuming what's in their head when they're doing X or Y or Z, but watching what they do. So if I'm talking to, I'm trying to think of somebody off the top of my head, but I can't right now. But I'm an outgoing, forceful, energetic, high D, high I, person. And if I'm interacting with a more reserved person, a quieter person, a more analytical person than me, and I'm making big gestures and talking fast and talking loud, and I continue to do that, I'm sending them all kinds of signals that we're different. Mm-hmm. If I pay attention to their behavior and I see them talking slower, talking more carefully, pausing, looking away, then I'm going to slow down. I'm going to make smaller gestures. I'm going to pause more when I talk so that our differences are less severe. I'm not going to guess why they're doing those things. I'm not going to judge why they're doing those things. I'm just going to understand that their behavior is a huge signaling effect to their own version of the Platinum Rule. And they talk to me in a reserved, quiet, analytical way because they believe that's effective. The more I do that and less of my bombast, the more likely we are to reach agreement, collaborate effectively, and become useful colleagues to one another. You know, you ask yourself, before I send mail, is this a mail Bob will read? Okay. If Bob is a high C, if he's analytical, if he's a perfectionist, if he's a software developer, he's not really an outgoing, friendly person. He's a good person. He's not unfriendly. He's not rude. He simply doesn't engage in a lot of smiling, a lot of glad handing, and so on. Should I start my mail? Bob, hey, how's it going? How's your weekend? Great to see you the other day. Hope the family's well, and so on. No.
You should go round to Bob's cubicle and invite him for a coffee and then have that conversation, right?
Yeah, how about we have a coffee? No. Yeah, it's Bob. First line, I need some help on Project X. Let me give you the background, and then there are some questions, okay? You know, before you set up a meeting, ask yourself, is this the way Mary likes to have the agenda? Based on what I know, if Mary's input is important. Before I set up the travel plans that I'm going to set up, is this what I know of Jerry based on behaviors I've observed? As opposed to, I don't know anything about him, I'll just do what makes sense to me. Before I send in this document, before I arrange this web page, will it make sense to the users, whatever users we have? What do we know about our users and so on? Other people are not like you, and even when they do the same thing as you, they have different rationales, different motivations, different intent. It is the behavior that matters. It is the behavior we need to pay attention to. That's it. You want to summarize?
Sure. So one of the things that I found is that forgiving people for not acting the way you would have done reduces friction. Because my first reaction is, why did you do it that way? My assumption is they did it on purpose to irritate me, and that's not helpful. And to step back from that and say, it's okay, they just did it because that's the person they are, and I'm just going to put my irritation to one side and try and work with it, that calms things. It reduces friction. And then if you think about their actions, if you think about what they did and how you can fit in with that and what that tells you about the way they like to be treated, you start to not only reduce the negative, but increase the positive, increase the peace and harmony. And just putting your own desires aside and doing things the way somebody else would prefer increases the goodwill and improves your relationships. So why would you not do it?
Since the second most important thing in your career after results is relationships.
Relationships. Exactly.
Okay. Thanks, Wendy.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.
That's it. Hope this was helpful, folks. Come back next week to Career Tools.
Career Tools produces actionable guidance for professionals every week. To receive additional materials via our newsletter and to find products for situations you may face, go to www.managertools.com. Search for Career Tools on Twitter and LinkedIn.